welcome to the Off Leash Podcast with Dr. Pete. Dr. Pete is not here at the moment. He is actually on vacation. So it is just going to be me, myself, and I, and Tim Van de Giesen, who is actually a food scientist, dog food scientist, right?
Food scientist, that's correct.
Okay, yeah. So we are going to be going over a lot of dog health related topics or dog food topics today. But we're glad for you to join us today. Remember, we're not here to say what you want us to say. We're here to be an advocate for your pet. So let's jump on into it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone.
All right, Tim. So give us a little bit about you.
So a little bit about me. I grew up on a farm in Michigan, and Dr. Pete and I were actually friends from way back in my childhood.
I didn't know this.
He was a veterinarian to our animals on the farm. Mm-hmm. And growing up in the 4-H and small community, he was the first veterinarian that I remembered coming to our farm and working on our animals.
What kind of animals did you have on the farm?
On the farm, because it was a family farm, we were two generations. My grandparents lived about a quarter of a mile from us, and we lived in just a home, but would go to the farm. They lived on the farmstead. So we had, on the farmstead, we had cattle, sheep, pigs, and chickens.
Which one were your favorite?
Well, it was a progression. So growing up, when you're a small child, you start with a rabbit. Mm-hmm. It was given to you at Easter.
I assume you were in 4-H.
I was definitely in 4-H. All my siblings were in 4-H. We graduated from the rabbit to a smaller animal, the sheep. And from sheep, we grew into the market animals of the
cows and everything.
Yes. And
I couldn't do
horses.
Cows.
So we also had horses.
They tried to put me in 4-H and I couldn't come up with the idea that the animal died at the end.
Right.
So I had a really hard time with it.
It was a life lesson, and you take care of the animal. And then when the fair comes to a close, the animal is sold, and you have to say goodbye to that animal.
So, and then it goes to your college fund, right?
It does go to your college fund, and it helps you further your education.
There you go. Right. I love that. So at that age, did you have dogs?
So we always had dogs growing up on the farm, and they were herding dogs because the cattle and the sheep all went out to pasture, and we never went and got them. The dogs went and got them and brought them back to the barn every night.
So were they highly trained, or were they just...
So they were not highly trained. They were your average English shepherd, and he roamed out in the field. He got in the truck and went to the feed mill to get feed with my grandpa and I every week or 2 weeks, whenever that happened. Mm-hmm. And those are just fond memories that don't happen today.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I was around herding dogs more. I think that I see videos of them online all the time. I think they're so cool.
Oh, they definitely are very highly intelligent animals.
They are. They are. And now you have hunting dogs.
And now I have hunting dogs.
And you're constantly down in Kansas hunting.
We do hunt a lot in Kansas. Also hunt South Dakota and other states where there are wild populations of upland game.
That's awesome. Right. And I always enjoy hearing your stories. So we have a segment on here called Old Dogs, New Tricks, where we basically, even though you're so far along in your career, you still learn everything day to day, right? You still learn something new every week.
Absolutely. Not even every week. It's every day.
Okay.
If you don't learn something every day, you might as well just sit in your chair and watch The Price is Right every day.
Exactly. So what have you learned recently that's like new in your repertoire of information that you did not have before about the pet food industry?
So new in my repertoire about the pet food industry is the fact that the things that since COVID have changed are the supply chain, for sure.
Yes.
The supply chain is so dynamic. it is changing every day.
There was a huge problem during COVID with dog food manufacturers getting there, especially chicken.
Yes.
Because chicken was scarce.
Chicken products were scarce. A lot of ingredients were very hard to come by. And the supply chain is the backbone of the industry.
Okay. So tell me exactly, I guess we could tell our listeners, what you did before in the pet food industry.
So a little bit about my background is in the pet food industry, I worked for Hill's Pet Nutrition, headquartered in Topeka, Kansas, and it was the building blocks of my pet food background per se. So I learned about working with veterinarians. I learned about clinical trials. I learned about the analysis of the food and the analysis of the pet, basically. So how you formulate foods that meet the pet's needs. And the clinical trials basically help determine if that food meets an animal's needs.
Right.
So you feed the food to the animal, you gather the data, and that includes you may be gathering urine, you may be gathering feces, you may be gathering other information.
Testing it all.
The tartar on the dog's teeth. So if you have a dog food that is a dental diet and reduces tartar, you have to measure the tartar that builds up on the teeth.
Oh gosh, that would be hard to measure.
So what you have to do is you literally get in there with a micrometer and measure how the tartar grows over a 6-month period.
Wow.
So very scientific.
Very extensive stuff.
Right.
Okay. And then Dr. Pete got a hold of you about the dog food, wanted to start a dog food company without any chelated copper in it. What was your initial reaction?
So Dr. Pete and I, he calls me and he says, hey, we need to have lunch. We meet at a local Schlotsky's for lunch.
Love Schlotsky's.
And I hear Cookie's story.
Mm-hmm.
So Cookie, for those of you that don't know, was Dr. Pete's son's dog that was rehomed from a shelter into the Van Vranken family.
She's a nice dog.
Cookie had a very shortened life due to her eating food that was over-fortified in copper, potentially, and also the fact that her liver was not able to get rid of the copper.
Yeah. When she died, we actually pulled her liver out, and it was disgusting. You can see a picture of it on our website. It's just completely, what's the right word for it, cirrhoted?
So the liver was hepatic, so it was cirrhosis of the liver.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it was just absolutely devastating, I know, for Dr. Pete especially.
It was.
So,
and so that day at Schlotsky's, he laid everything out and he said, hey, what can we do to change this industry?
Yeah.
So,
and you've been in the pet food industry for a while.
Well, I was with Hill 6 years in the pet food industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was long enough to make associations with everybody in the manufacturing aspects of pet food, the whole industry, basically. So upon retirement from my food science career in human food, Dr. Pete and I started this adventure. And it has been an adventure.
It has been. And we're happy to have you on the team.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, getting into our next segment, Canine Chronicles, which is news in the dog food world.
So
you know a lot more news than I do in the dog food world. You're a lot more in tune with everybody.
So news in the dog food world, I'm just going to go out there and say, hey, for those of you that can't find the diets that you've been feeding day in and day out, feel free to give our Voyager diets a try. There are some of the larger suppliers are incurring some unforeseen adventures right now, and you will be hearing about this in the near future. So if you can't find the brand you've been used to on the store shelf, go to our website, check our foods out, find foods that you'd like to feed.
So are there a lot of companies that are about to go out of business?
I'm not saying there are a lot of companies that are going out of business. What I'm going to say is there are supply chain hiccups out there right now. And
that could mean the end of a brand.
There are a few large companies, one in particular, that may be experiencing some short-term issues. So give our brand a chance.
And then we just went through the whole recall with Victor.
We did go through a recall with Victor.
Yeah. Well, not us personally, but no, just right. I've just been going to trade shows and hearing it from everybody, the big Victor recall.
The industry itself, yes. Yeah. And once again, it goes back to the supply chain, right? So if you can't manufacture and get your products to your distribution centers and then to your customers and then eventually to the end user, you, the pet parent that feeds the food, it's a major issue.
Yeah. So exactly what happens, because I know that Victor's big deal was salmonella, correct?
That is correct, to our knowledge.
To our knowledge.
Yes.
Now, what causes, what is something that would cause salmonella? Is it bad ingredients that are showing up to the plant, or is it?
So, salmonella is a bacterial and microbial issue. It's something that we deal with as food scientists and in the supply chain world and production. We have to take those precautions to control the microbial content of the product. And when I say the product, it's the end product that matters. Mm-hmm. So if you do not have a kill step in your process to kill the bacteria, because it's in a lot of ingredients that are used, and if the ingredient comes in contaminated, it is not a good situation.
Okay, so it always starts with coming in contaminated. I was wondering if it was when it comes in or
starts
sits.
In.
Because it doesn't.
But it can also develop and grow in a part of the process. So if you think about a potential dryer that doesn't get hot enough to kill the bacteria, or it builds up in the dryer and you don't clean it well enough. There are a whole list of things and checkpoints that have to be done in the process to ensure that your process is safe and clean and always ready to deliver a high-quality product
free of microbes. You visited a lot of dog food plants.
I have visited a lot of dog food plants.
Okay. And what do you look for when you go to a dog food plant?
So the first thing I look for in a dog food plant is when I walk into the area of the process.
Is he sleeping? We have a dog in here. I just hear snoring.
I don't even see him.
Oh, he's over by me. Oh. That's why.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Okay. So the first thing I look for when I walk into the process area is, number one, is there a process in place to contain the microbes that might be on the soles of my footwear. So, and this is a fairly new step in the quality process and part of the good manufacturing practices. So when you step into the process area, you should have some sort of a, quote, foot bath to curtail the microbes on your feet. That's one small step to take to look at and see if your process and products are made in a facility that uses good manufacturing practices.
Yeah, hygiene is a big thing.
Hygiene is huge. And if you think about a lot of the processes and products use raw meats. There's always bacteria loads in raw meats. So We do not use raw meats in our products. So I will say that right up front.
Okay. Getting into the next segment, information and peace of mind. I actually was reading an article on DVM 360 the other day, and they were basically debunking things about dog food.
Okay, so debunking the myths.
So, or I shouldn't say debunking the myths, putting clarification out there for stigma in the dog food world. So the first myth is meat should be the primary ingredient in dog food.
So I'm not going to say meat should be the primary ingredient in dog food.
That's the myth. Yeah.
So what has to be in dog food are you have to have the building blocks in the correct order to deliver the nutrition the animal needs.
Yes. And it doesn't always have to be meat.
Meat does not always have to be the first ingredient on your ingredient statement. That is correct.
Okay. And for everyone that reads a dog food label out there, the ingredients are listed from greatest to least, pre-cooked.
That is correct. They have to be ordered in the highest content as is, so as that diet is formulated and put into the process.
Exactly. Because it's all about the volume or quantity of the ingredient in the beginning. And then after it's cooked, it could be completely different on the list.
It definitely can change during the process. That is correct.
Okay. Myth number two, a high protein diet is superior.
So that is also a false statement. So there is a range of protein that the animal needs, but more specifically is the animal needs enough protein, but it also needs the protein and energy that it burns. So if you think of things, it's what you put in, but it's also what's taken out during the course of the animal's day that you have to balance.
Right, exactly. So I know a lot of dog foods out there, they put in, especially to their ingredients, like 5-6 proteins in one bag of dog food. I call it the kitchen sink method. You just throw a bunch of stuff in there. But the protein ends up being in these bags like 29, 30, 32% protein.
Right. And to be specific, there's protein in a lot of the ingredients that make up a pet food label. So there's protein in meats. There's protein in grains.
That's true.
So it's not the fact that there's multiple ingredients containing protein.
Is there different percentages? Like, is there, say you put salmon in a dog food versus chicken. Is there a different amount of protein in that salmon versus the chicken?
Every ingredient has a range of protein for it. And when we're formulating diets, we use the average range across the board of an ingredient. And that range is determined through analytical data. So multiple lots are analyzed and then you come up with that average.
Okay. Another myth, the more fruit and vegetable ingredients, the better.
So it's like this. It's everything in moderation is perfect for the dog, but you do need to supply enough of the basic building blocks, and it's the essential amino acids that have to be in the diet to allow the animal to thrive.
We just talked about this the other day because sometimes you flip over a dog food bag and there's blueberries and rosemary and all this stuff in there.
And there are definitely good aspects of blueberries.
But there's not that much in there.
That's correct. But the fact that they're in there at a smaller percentage, so I'm going to give you an example. Blueberries are a very good antioxidant. An antioxidant is something that protects parts of the body, and in specifically, it reduces how Muscle may be broken down, and that's just one example. So antioxidants are a good thing. And a lot of fruits and vegetables do contain some natural antioxidants that are beneficial in a dog diet.
Yeah. All right. The next myth is organic and all natural products or pet foods are healthier. So words like organic, holistic.
Yeah, this is a growing concern. And an organic pet food does have to be certified, and all the ingredients have to be tracked and traceable. And there are definitely criteria set to meet an organic claim.
Does it have to be like no antibiotics, no hormones, grass-fed?
So it's... those are all specific claims. So organic has its own claims. So it's all around how and what types of fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides and things are used. And in the meat aspect, you can't feed any grain that's had certain herbicides and pesticides used on it. There's a whole list of criteria to meet these claims.
Okay, interesting. Here's a good myth. This actually applies to our food. Byproducts are a waste.
So,
are waste.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's not always true. And the labeling and terminology of things don't always tell the full story. So the issue with a byproduct meal that we use is the fact that that actually is not going in a landfill. It is an aspect of the process of the chain, the human food chain, because it comes from a specific species of animals. But another benefit is that particular item is very highly digestible. And mm-hmm. I also want to get into that a little bit more in maybe a subsequent podcast, because the digestibility of a diet will tell you a lot.
Let's get into it right now. Tell me about it.
Okay. So if you want to feed a highly digestible diet, there will be a lot of benefits. So, and a lot of processors and a lot of dog food brands don't disclose their digestibility numbers.
Why is that?
And it's just not a common practice. The one thing that I can tell you is that our diets are highly digestible. We do and have done limited trials and feeding trials to collect that data.
On digestibility and palatability.
On digestibility and palatability. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our foods do use the byproducts. Right. Chicken byproduct.
Chicken byproduct meal is one of the ingredients we do use. And the reason you want a diet that's highly digestible is you certainly don't want to turn your dog out in the yard and find a pile of poop that's huge, because that dog is just excreting nutrients or excreting ingredients that it cannot utilize.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's definitely something I've heard from a lot of our clients, is once their dog goes on our food, the stools get smaller and less frequent.
And they are definitely very easy to remove from your yard.
Yes, exactly. So explain to me what's in chicken byproduct meal.
So
for all the listeners out there.
It is chicken, and it is parts that of the process of chicken. So if you think about going to the grocery store and you buy a chicken breast and it doesn't have any bones on it, there are also chicken breasts that contain bones and wings and legs and all the other parts of the chicken. So what we utilize is we use a an ingredient from the process that is, it contains meat, but it also may contain a small portion of a piece of bone. But that piece of bone is not advantageous, or not a disadvantage, I should say, because it contains nutrients and minerals such as calcium and phosphorus, and all those minerals are still used by the dog.
And organ meat.
And organ meat is another issue that people think is disgusting. I can tell you that some of the organ meats are very highly palatable, and those organ meats are used in a lot of palatability enhancers and a lot of things. And in nature, those organs are the first that the wolf goes to, and the wolf has survived for a long period of time.
Exactly. So let's get back into our myths. Gluten and grains are bad for dogs.
So I'm going to start out with the fact that we utilize an ingredient that everyone thinks is bad today, and that's the kernel of corn.
Everyone hates corn.
So there is no reason to hate corn. Corn has essential amino acids, methionine and cysteine.
Precursors to taurine.
Precursors to taurine. Those essential amino acids are the building blocks to nutrition in human food and pet food, and regenerate our body as we take in nourishment.
Exactly. Raw food diets are superior to kibble.
So there's a lot of myths about kibble and raw.
It's not balanced. Raw can't be balanced, right?
So I'm not going to say that raw can't be balanced. I think there are a couple of people out there who are balancing raw diets. They've analyzed the ingredients and they're doing the right things. But I can tell you there are very few raw diets out there that are completely balanced and meet the requirements set out by NRC, which is the National Research Council for Animals.
Yeah. And let's talk about the E. coli, salmonella that you can get from eating raw food, ingredients.
If precautions are not taken when making raw diets, they are highly susceptible to enhanced loads of microbial content. So the processors that are doing a good job, they understand this, they know this. It's the mom and pop boutique, if you will, brands that have popped up recently that tend to incur some of the higher microbial loads.
And the bones in a raw diet.
Well, there are bones in raw diet.
And can't they fracture the dog's teeth?
So they can fracture teeth. They can pierce the esophagus when they're ingested.
The stomach.
They can go through the entire digestive system. And they are a increased risk at times.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got for you for the myths today.
Yeah, well.
Those are some good ones.
Those are good ones.
So, in your career now, you are currently working with Voyager Dog Food. Any other companies?
So, I am not working for any other pet food companies at this point in time. I am also still consulting in the human food industry.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So, I work for a major cereal company.
We can't name drop it on here?
I cannot name drop.
Well, we're in Battle Creek, so fill in the gaps there.
There are companies in Battle Creek, yes.
Major cereal companies,
yes.
Continue.
Right. So I do that part-time, 15 to 20 hours a week. I spend 15 to 20 hours a week in the pet food industry, keeping abreast of the industry, helping formulate foods and working to get our company to the next level where we need to go.
Exactly. Well, I'm all out of questions for you today, hey, unless there's anything else you want to touch on.
It's been a pleasure. I enjoy what I'm doing today, and I would encourage everyone, if you have questions, please give us a holler. We're here to help, and we'll be glad to get back to you.
Thanks, Tim. All right, let's get some outro music. All right, guys, we sure appreciate you listening with us today, and we hope that you've been able to share some information that will help you love your animals as much as they love you. Don't forget, always treat the treatable so we can prevent the preventable, and we'll catch you on the next one.